Yosher is our ability to hold the line. And the question is, how do we maintain right relationship with all the pieces of such a fragmented world? I'm Rav Mike Foyer, and this is the Jewish Heroism Project. Lesson 6, The Path of Yosher. Yosher is integrity, the ability to hold the line. And it is the sixth path on the Torah's heroic journey. Now, remember, I hope you're on that first path, the quest for Tov, in pursuit of the goodness of creation and learning to recognize it in everything which you see. And if you went through that gate, you've probably also headed out on the path of Avodah, of service, aiming to become an Eved Ne'eman, the faithful servant who puts their effort toward cultivating a vision of Tov, of good in the world. And if you have, I really hope you've uncovered something which calls you to take a stand, that you've headed out on the path of the Ivri, standing opposite what is for the sake of what must be. That, of course, leads to hearing a call and throwing yourself into it with Misirut, growing beyond your limited self in devotion to the good which you serve. Because if you give yourself over wholeheartedly, then you may merit to see the horizon of the possible lift, to step into a world no longer bounded by what you believed to be true of it or of yourself, a world of emet, truth, where the infinite shines through, where you will have to face a more encompassing reality, a new horizon defined by knowledge of the world itself, which did not exist before. Exposure to this type of truth demands action. We didn't speak about it in the last episode, but the encounter with Emet is never ignored. Oh, you can run, fight, hide if you feel threatened by the truth, or you can embrace it, grow into it, if you feel like it could uplift you into a broader existence which you want. But no matter what, once truly encountered, we live in active relationship to Emet. And that's where the next path, the path of Yosher, of integrity, comes in. Because not all relationships are clear or honest. The opening of a horizon of the previously unknown is disorienting almost by definition, and therefore it can awaken emotions of fear and desire. It can challenge intellectual constructs, ideas, conceptions, the way we think. It may even make demands that I change my behavior through new action. And all this means that staying on the path of Emet demands a commitment to right relationship, to Yosher, to integrity, to hold the line in relationship to the truth to which I've been exposed. Because if I want to live up to that vision of truth I have for myself and for the world, to take that Emet all the way to the destination which lies before us, ultimately, we're looking for a world of Malchut, of kingship, where we, all existence, actually embody the divine goodness that they were created to express. If I want that, then I have to hold the line. I must have integrity, right relationship with self, other, and world. Now, I'm translating Yosher as integrity, and not without cause. But before you just swallow my definition, let's take a little look into the text to try to find its origins. Now, if we use that home-based approach and look for the specific word Yosher in its first appearance, we land in the 9th chapter of the book of Deuteronomy of Devarim. And there it says, Lo bitzidkatcha ubayosher levavcha ataba lereshet et artsam. It's not through your righteousness or through the Yosher of your heart that you've come to inherit this land. It's a description as the children of Israel are waiting on the edge of the wilderness to go in to the good green land that they've been promised. It's a reminder, really, not just a description, that it's not because of our righteousness or our merits that we're getting the land, but it's because they have destroyed, they being the seven nations, their chance to stay there and the promise to our forefathers. But what we've learned for our purposes here is that Yosher is a quality of the heart. Note that it's paired here with tzedek, righteousness as it's generally translated, and righteousness finds its primary expression in the actions of one's hands. Stay tuned the exploration of the tzaddik, of the righteous, as a model of Jewish hero. But for now, not through the righteousness of your actions, nor the yosher of your inner workings. I say inner workings because the ancient world didn't speak about the mind. The heart was the seat of the will, of all abstract ideas and motivations, in fact. And so we have to ask, what quality of the heart is yosher? Well, if we stick with our approach and seek out the first appearance of the three-letter root, yashar, yud, shin, resh, that makes up yosher, well, then we end up in the book of Exodus, 15th chapter, where it says, Vayomer, im shamo tishma b'kol Hashem, if you surely listen to the voice of the Lord your God, v'hayashar be'enav taseh, you do that which is yashar in God's eyes, right? You listen to the commandments, you keep the statutes, then God promises that all the diseases which were placed upon Egypt will not be placed upon us, ki ani Hashem rofech, because I am the Lord your healer. It's a powerful verse, which as always deserves its own exploration. A powerful moment, in fact. This is the first national covenant, right after crossing the Red Sea. It's basically a precursor of what's to come next at Sinai. If you keep these commandments, this is what will happen for you. And here, yashar is an adjective describing how God sees the world. Or more specifically, how human action is meant to look in God's eyes. As in the standard translation of the verse, and do that which is right in God's eyes. A moving idea, certainly. An ideal, an aspiration, but not so helpful for our purposes. I mean, how am I supposed to know what looks right to God? Right? The divine perspective, by definition, is inaccessible. And this is where meaning and context can provide some assistance. Yashar in God's eyes comes as part of a package. Listening to divine commands, keeping the statutes. Now, commands and statutes, at least, we can locate in the text. They're written down. But what does making my actions right in God's eyes actually look like? Now, the classic commentator Ibn Ezra, amongst many others, solved the problem by focusing on the fact that it says, Hayashar be'enav ta'aseh, do that which is right in God's eyes. Do means these are the mitzvot aseh, the positive commandments, as opposed to the rest of the verse, which apparently refers to the lo taseh, the negative. Now, one way that we can understand the distinction between the positive and negative commandments is to say that the latter, the negative, are warnings about the boundaries of creation. Don't go there. I made it this way. Keep things safe. While the former, the positive, are invitations to deeper relationship with creation. These are guidance for how we actualize ourselves and the world. We bring out the goodness which is not yet through these positive commandments. And doing so, make the world more reflective of the divine intent, more aligned with the essential good, the world which God wants to see. Hayashar be'enav ta'aseh is a call to engage creation in a way in which God sees fit, so that it and you will become more fit in God's eyes, living in integrity with the world. So there's no question that yosher is a quality of the heart, as we just saw. And frankly, there's a phrase, yishrei lev, the straight of heart, which is repeated over and over in the Hebrew Bible. Now, we might call it heartfelt integrity. I might even call it a simplicity of self. I want you to picture someone that you associate with integrity, or perhaps a moment in your life when you really expressed integrity. You got it? I promise you that almost always, these are people who do what they do because it must be done without having to think about it. Or it's a time when you chose to do that which was right because it was right and really for no other reason. There's a unique joy that comes from acting in integrity. As it says in the book of Psalms, Ol zaru la tzaddik, there's a light sown in the world for the righteous. Ul yishrei lev simcha. And for those who have integrity of heart, there is joy. Notice again, righteousness and integrity. And this link between integrity and simcha, joy, deserves a deep explanation. You can check out on the Instagram page of Jewish Heroism Project a little bit of a video about that. But for now, think of it as a built-in motivator in our struggle to keep integrity. Because integrity, as we'll see, is never a straight line process, even though it may mean straight. At least our struggle brings us joy. But beyond that, That joy is also a waymarker. It helps us know when we're on the straight path in life. The problem is that such simple integrity and the joy it brings are easily lost in life. In fact, they're rarely found. You know, King Solomon warned us about this in Kohelet, Ecclesiastes, for those of you who are Greek speakers, 7th chapter, 29th verse. You can see the source page, by the way, on the JewishHeroism.com site. There, Shlomo says the following. He says, well, I've also seen this. Asher asar Elohim et Adam yashar. God made humanity yashar. Made us straightforward with integrity. But we sought out all kinds of complicated accounts and even intrigues. You know, it's an amazing idea. God made humanity right. Life can actually be quite straightforward in its essence. It's like the premise of that book, which was once popular, All I Really Need to Know, I Learned in Kindergarten. But we seek out other accountings, intrigues, complications. In the end, most of us do this because we're seeking to be our own arbiters of what's right and wrong. And the danger of such a self-referential accounting is that yosher, integrity, is often the first thing we lose. Now, Shlomo fortunately gives us guidance for how to avoid this problem in the book of Proverbs. That's Mishlei, where he says, Holech biyoshro yarei Hashem. Those who maintain their integrity, they go straight, fear the Lord. Un loz dahav bozeu, but a man of devious ways scorns him. Now, we can put the religiosity of the statement to the side. It may or may not speak to you. I myself would love to explore the idea of Yirei Elohim, fearing God, maybe another time. But religious or not, what we learn here is that in order to keep on the right path in life, to have integrity, there must be some signpost to guide us beyond our own thoughts and desires. That's the meaning of this powerful warning with which the book of Judges ends. If you're not familiar, most literary of all the books, the sages say it was Samuel the prophet who put it together in order to instruct us about what the kingdom ought to look like. And there at the end, after relating two major stories, which incorporate the most awful aspects of human personal and national existence, I mean, idolatry, rape, civil war, human dismemberment, there, Samuel ends the book with the following line. He says, "Bayamim ha'hem, in those days, ein melech b'Yisrael. There was no king in Israel." Now, he might have stopped there, and we'd read the book as a plug for the kingship which he himself helped to establish. But then he adds the following. Ish hayashar b'einav ya'aseh. Everyone did that which was right in their own eyes. What do you mean? I mean, I would have expected there was no king in that day. Things were lawless. There was no king in that day. It was totally chaos. No king in that day. Everybody did which was right in their own eyes. Have you ever been lost in the woods? Or, even if you haven't, have you ever had some outdoor training? I hope so. If you have, then you know that the number one instruction when you get lost in the woods is stop. Stay where you are. That way, you don't get more lost, and we have some hope of finding you. But here's the trick. No one starts out knowing that they're lost. And that's the danger that the prophet Samuel is speaking about, right? Just picture it. You're footing down the trail, happy to be making time, headed in the totally wrong direction because it's right in your eyes. When there is no king, no fear of God, or even just a rule outside of your own self-interest that can help you orient to the world in which you actually live, then you risk racing ahead on a path which is right, but only in your eyes. And as we've seen, if you don't serve something outside of yourself, you often end up serving your most base elements, and they're not going to steer you along the path which has a happy ending. And that's why our greatest tests of integrity come through relationship with our own self and with those around us. If you want to talk about that, by the way, reach out for some counseling work, robmikefoyer@gmail.com. But for now, let's let this notion of a fear of God, of a king who creates order, who sets the rules, represent the honesty and self-awareness, which are a necessary precursor to any integrity that help us avoid the trap of a self-referential reality and head out on a path which we truly can become ourselves upon. You know, in modern Hebrew and in classical, yashar bears the simple meaning of straight. A line is yashar, right? But it's always rich with these connotations of smooth, right? Even agreeable. Yeah, yashar ba'enecha, right? That look good to you. That which is right in one's eyes isn't always just the straight path, or frankly, even the right one, which is why yosher integrity can never be reduced to simply holding to the line, even though I like that phrase. I can have an exposure to true, to real emet, a true conception, an honest awareness that something must be done in the world, or that I must never do something again. But no matter how profound that realization is, we don't work in a way in which it just becomes what we do. It's not so simple to change straight away in the face of truth. This has to do with what we spoke about last episode, these kohot hanefesh, the powers of the limited self. Our ability to think, feel, act, those will always lag in their ability to express the light of the infinite that comes through an encounter with emet. I'll give you a prosaic example, right? I may accept the absolute truth that I should not be eating Ben and Jerry's standing up at the freezer at 10 at night. It's truly bad for me. But no matter what, there will be a period of struggle until I am able to align my behaviors to that belief. This gives us a basic definition of integrity that I work with a lot in my counseling practice. Toho kibaro, as the sages say, your inside reflects your outside, that your behaviors match your beliefs. Right? And that's never a simple process. So integrity is more than just holding a line. There you go. I had my encounter with truth, and now I'm a new man. Living with integrity, therefore, incorporates the experience of failure. I recommend you take a look at the video which gives the practice of yosher. Right there again, jewishheroism.com. You can see the video with source sheets if you want to understand the sort of very profound process of failing forward. But for now, you know, it's kind of like they taught us in geometry class once upon a time. Oh, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. I mean, it's a powerful axiom, but when applied to the world in which we actually live, it's pretty much irrelevant. Life rarely offers such a straight route beyond geometry class, which isn't to say that there is no derech hayashar, that there's no straight route through life. It's just a straight route, which was anything but linear. It demands yosher, integrity, in order to follow this route. And the route itself will teach us the yosher we need to have through our struggle to stay on it. There's an amazing exploration or explanation or exposure, if you will, of this feeling of a desire for a straight route, once again, in Psalms. From King David there in the fifth Psalm, it says, Hashem nanchein b'tzidkatecha, right? God, guide me in your righteousness. Notice again the pairing. L'man shorai, in order to show all those disparagers who I am. Hayasha lefanai derechecha. Make your way before me straight, right, smooth, hayashar, right? You know, it's not only a request, by the way. We know that David was answered because scroll forward to the dedication of the first temple, built, of course, by his son, King Solomon. There, Solomon, in the eighth chapter of the book of first book of Kings, highly recommended to read, right there, actually in the ninth, right, Solomon prays that his work should find favor in God's eye. And God says, yes, I will cause my presence to dwell in your house. And furthermore, promises that Solomon will have a throne that will stand forever with his descendants upon it, so long as, im telech lefanai, if you go before me, kasher halach David avicha, just like your father David did. How? Betom levav, in that wholeness, remember that tam that we explored with Abraham, that wholeness of heart, uve yosher, and in integrity. Now, if you know anything about King David's life, then you know his path from shepherd to king of Israel and beyond was far from straight or simple. And that means that David's request wasn't a prayer for an easy, straight line way, but rather that God should show him a path which would make him a man of integrity. As in the modern Hebrew phrase, yisher kav, to fall into line, David was asking for God to show him the way in which he could align himself with God's way and become the person he needed to be. And apparently, he received it. Now, this presents us with another aspect of Yosher. It isn't just holding the line, it's alignment. Because no matter where David's feet may have wandered, they were always seeking to take that right path. And the right path, no matter how winding it may have been, was the one which made him into who he was meant to be. Now, our tradition calls this the longer, shorter path. Right? There are ways in which the straight is not available, and so therefore the only short path is the long way around. You know, oftentimes integrity is about bouncing back and forth between success and failure, between the highs and lows of life, and yet the key is never lose my momentum forward. Picture it. If I go back and forth like this, there's a line which emerges from that oscillation. It traces a path connecting between who I am and who I need to be. But there's no way to travel it straight. There's no way to even find that line without the integrity of aligning myself constantly. It's the straight path in life, which is far from linear, the longer, shorter way. And there's no one's story in our tradition who can teach us more about how to travel that path than that of Yosef, the son of Yaakov. So, if I had to sum up the moral of Yosef's story, I might say Yosef's story teaches us that life is the pits, but not in the way you probably think. In the beginning, we're presented with the kid who just can't hold it, the classic pipsqueak. There in Genesis, in the 37th chapter, it says that at 17, Joseph was tending the flocks with his brothers, a helper, Na'ar, to the sons of his father's wives, Bilhah and Zilpah, and he brought bad reports of them to their father. Ooh, as the father of five, oof, there's nothing worse than the stinker, the one who rats on his brothers, right? But if being a stinker wasn't bad enough, Rashi actually makes the picture of Yosef worse, which is interesting, because you should know something about Rashi if you don't, that his systematic approach is to elevate our holy ancestors, to show their actions always in the best light, except actually when it comes to Yosef. You know, I might say it's because Rashi understood that Yosef was a man of integrity, and life is the pits for him. It's the bad sides which teach us the most. Hence, he reads Hu Na'ar not as he assisted these brothers, he was a helper, but rather Hu Na'ar. Na'ar is like a teenager. He was an awful teenager, says Rashi, always fixing his hair and, you know, making funny faces with his eyes, trying to look pretty. So here he is, the good-looking younger brother, not to be trusted, and what's worse, he's dad's favorite, because the text goes on and says, V'Yisrael ahavet Yosef, right? Israel, Yaakov, loved Joseph mikol banav more than all of his sons. Ki ben zekunim hu, he was the child of his elder age, but and he made him a ketonet pasim. He made him this famous many-colored coat, right? I don't want to go into the details of the many-colored coat or even the favoritism, but as a parent, I can't blow by the fact that Yaakov favored one of his children and he let it be known. The first is perhaps only human, but the second is a disaster. But the Torah does provide an explanation for how this special connection between Yaakov and Yosef came about. Ki ben zekunim hu. Simple reading, he was ben zekunim, he's born late in Yaakov's life. He's the little kid that came along, not quite last, but close to it. He's also the firstborn of Rachel, of his beloved wife for whom he worked so hard back there in Haran. Now, Targum Onkelos, the classic Aramaic translation of Torah, takes it a little further. He says, well, what is ben zekunim hu? It doesn't mean he was just the child of his old days. He was bar hakim hule. He was the wise son. He was the one who would be able to receive the Hebrew wisdom tradition, passed from Shem Be'eber, the Ivri, all the way down, in many ways, the whole story of the book of Bereshit, known as the book of the Yashar, the book of those with integrity, not because they take a straight path, but because their failures become successes in making them who they are, right? He was the one who was able to receive that wisdom tradition. Rashi adds another explanation for what does ben zekunim mean. It means he was similar in his shahaya ziv ikunin chelo. His countenance was similar to Yaakov. They looked alike. That's a strange explanation for why Yaakov would favor him. But as we'll see, it's far from a simple one. So here we are with Yosef, tattletaling younger brother, too smart for his own good, and Dad's favorite as well. It's clear this is not going to end well. And becomes even more clear once Yosef's dreams become part of the picture. Yet another way that he's like Yaakov, right? He's having these dramatic nighttime visions. Unlike Yaakov, however, he shares them with his brothers. And surprise, surprise, you know, stories about how he's going to symbolically rule over all of them doesn't make Yosef any more beloved to his siblings. In fact, despite his father's attempts at caution, they take the first opportunity to beat him up and throw him in a pit. That's right. He's there in the pit. And the question is, how does the kid who can't hold it, so bursting at the seams with the potential of everything that he will be, that he manages to alienate the people around him, his own brothers, he can't live in right relationship with his own abilities or the people around him. How does this child become the model of integrity, known as Yosef HaTzadik, Joseph the Righteous, and a king in Egypt? So Yosef is the archetype who follows Yaakov in our journey of the Torah's heroic path, because staying on the path of Emet, staying true, requires Yosher. It needs integrity. Remember that image of the wheel of truth, right? Yaakov, you, me, everyone, is there at the center, right? And the horizon of the unknown and the known are out there around us that we hold fast to with the kohot hanefesh, our mental processes, our emotional capacities, our physical powers that make up daily experience of the nefesh, the limited being. Yosef represents the struggle to stay upright, to remain oriented to the truth I know and believe that are out there on the horizon by keeping integrity in my mental, emotional, and physical powers. It's exactly what Yosef in the story wasn't doing in relationship to his own powers or his brothers, all the essential elements of his world. His failure of integrity, his inability to keep a grip on right behavior and right relationship, to remain humble, focused, determined to achieve mission, because of course he does have a real mission. His abilities are quite true, but his inability to stay in right relationship pushes him off course. He loses orientation and boom, ends up in a pit. Which is good news, actually, because Yosef, as the embodiment of the quality of integrity, is there to teach us that life is the pits. Meaning, not that life sucks, life is the pits because it's hard, I mean, that's also true, but his very failures place Yosef in the situations where he's forced to either come to integrity, enter into right relationship, the world within him and without him, or to die. Okay? That life is the pits because that's where real living begins. So back to our story, Yosef gets a lift out of the first pit, perhaps even a ride down to Egypt. It's a complicated story when you look at the details, but basically out of the pit, into the hands of slave traders, and from there to the house of Potiphar. Right? Now it's interesting, as soon as he shows up there, the Torah goes out of its way to give us a new description of Yosef. He calls it Ish Matzliach. He's a successful guy. Even there, in slavery, Yosef never stops moving forward. This is an important part of the quality of integrity. Right? As I said, life is about failure, growth. You pick yourself up, you pull it up, you re-engage, but only if you keep moving forward will the back and forth actually generate a line. He's Ish Matzliach, he's successful because he never stops trying. It's a phrase which gets repeated over and over again, together, by the way, with this notion of who's you matzachen. He finds favor in the eyes of those around. That idea of chen, of grace, or finding favor, is an essential element that we're going to wait to discuss till we get to the next and seventh episode, that the story of Queen Esther. But you know what? Despite his success in the house of Potiphar as a slave, he still can't hold it. It says that his master left everything in the hands of Yosef. He didn't even know what was going on until he came home to eat the dinner set at his table, right? And what? Vayi Yosef yefeh toar v'yefeh mareh. And Yosef was good looking and of good appearance. It's a strange thing to note in the phrase. And Rashi explains, once again, attacking Yosef. What does it mean, says Rashi? Why is it mentioned yefeh noar? He says, kevin shara et atzmo moshel. Since Yosef saw, hey, I'm in charge, he started to eat drink, curl his hair. So says Hashem, oh, your father is back there in Israel, mourning your death? He doesn't know you've survived, and you're curling your hair and eating big meals? Ho, 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 I'm going to set the bear on you. Right? He's not just good looking. Yosef is one who's paying lots of attention to his own looks. He's looking at himself, which is why the danger which is approaching him eludes his vision. And right afterwards we read, right, Vayi Ahar Darim Ha'ele, it was after all of these things, V'tisa Eshet Adonav Ednei Al Yosef, right? The wife of his master said, ooh, he is a good-looking kid, and she tried to get him to sleep with her. Now this is his next test. He failed in relationship with his brother. How is he going to do in relationship with his master and his wife? Well, the sages have a wild description of this interaction. He resisted for a while, then at a certain point, they said he went back to the house. It's a bit of a debate. Did he go back just to do his normal stuff and he got trapped by her? Or had he finally decided, listen, I've come this far in being an Egyptian. When in Egypt, do as the Egyptians do, and that's what's done here. Either way, he went back and he faced his greatest desire. He was about to give in to this beautiful woman tempting him, and suddenly he looks up and what does he see but a reflection of his father's face in the window. And the Midrash says that reflection spoke to him and said, Joseph, your brother's names are going to be engraved on the stones that the high priest will wear in the temple, meaning they will represent integrity of relationship between God and Israel. You want your name to be there? You can't do this. And suddenly, as he's on the edge of temptation, he literally digs his heels into the ground. He has to hold himself so hard that in perhaps the most graphic image I've seen in the Midrash, the sages say that drops of semen came out from between his fingernails, that the desire which he overcame was so profound. All his natural drive. Right? It's the natural next step of his progression. This seems to be the straight path in life. No one will ever know. Except he'll know. And that's not who he is. Now, it's quite important that in the moment of truth, he stands. And the sages say he stands, even though, of course, he springs a leak, so to speak, because he sees his father's face in the mirror. Now, if any of you know Stephen King, I would love you to reach out to him and ask if it's from this midrash that he got the notion that integrity means never forgetting your father's face. But Rashi already keyed us into what the sages meant. He didn't just see his father's face. Rashi told us that Yosef looked like his father. He looked in that mirror, and past the curled hair, past the Egyptian makeup, he saw himself. Himself as a reflection of his father, of the truth he was meant to be, and was in danger of losing as he lost his integrity, as he took the straight path toward desire, which was going to lead him about as fast and as far away from who he was meant to be. And so Yosef gets a grip. He enters into right relationship with his own desire. And what's his reward? You guessed it, right back in the pit. Okay, so here we are. Joseph's back in the pit, right? If you don't know the story, when he rejects the temptress, she's quite upset at his scorn and manages to arrange that her husband believes that Yosef was the instigator of this illicit approach, and he gets tossed by his master into jail. He's back in the pit. But not to worry. There in the pit, he once again finds favor in the eyes of the head jailer and maintains his status as Ish Matzliach, as the successful man who never stops moving forward. I'm, by the way, very excited, next episode, to speak about the relationship between Yosef and Esther, because it's not just that she also found favor in everyone's eyes. That ability proved essential to her ability to master the situation and to enter into kingship, something which Yosef does as well. So how does he get from the pit to the throne? Well, first things first. There in the jail, he has the same experience as he had as a slave in the house of Potiphar. The head jailer says, wow, this guy, he is just successful. Everything he does, God is with him, so he let him do everything. And who should come along but the butler and the baker, two royal servants who had kind of pooched it on the job. After years there in the pit, Yosef now finds himself as personal servant to royal servants. Now, one morning they wake up, and he notices that their faces are down. He says, what happened? And they tell him, we both had dreams. and there's no one to interpret them for us. Dreams play an important role here. If we were going to do a deep dive, we'd take that angle. But for now, you just need to know that Yosef interprets the butler's dream. Good news, butler says, oh, I'm squeezing grapes into the cup, and I gave the cup to Paro. And Yosef says, hey, I got good news for you. 3 days, and you will be placed back in your position. Baker sees good news. He tells Yosef his story. He's like, well, listen, the time frame is the same, but your end is bad. You know the birds that you saw eating the bread off your head, Baker? In 3 days, Paro will remember you as well, but it'll be off with your head. So Yosef then turns to the butler and says, listen, you're going back to Paro. Remember me, right? You're going to see the king. He tells him, you've got to remember me because I was stolen from the land of the Hebrews. And also here, Gampola Sitimuma. And even here, I ended up in this pit for no good reason. Notice he calls it a pit. Is Yosef in the first pit in that moment, in the second, or is it all one thing? He's in the dark. He doesn't know what to do. And he asks the butler's help. Now, our sages say that this was a tremendous weakness of faith. That ultimately, Yosef's integrity will hinge on his ability to fear God and really no one else. That's what allows him to maintain right relationship even as a king in Egypt. And he's not there yet, say the sages. So he had to spend 2 more years in the pit just for asking for the butler's help. I myself have always thought of that old joke about the guy who's at the flood and he's there and the water's rising and a boat comes and says, get on, we'll save you. He says, no, I trust in God. The waters keep rising and another boat comes. Come on, we'll save you. No, I trust in God. Finally, the water's making a the roof and the helicopter says, jump in, we'll save you. He says, no, and he drowns. He gets up to heaven. He says, God, I trusted in you. Why didn't you save me? God says, what do you mean? I sent you 2 boats and a helicopter, right? I've always felt that way. I mean, here's Yosef. The royal servant appears out of nowhere. It's his connection to Paro. What could be more obvious but the divine intervention? Either way, I'll suggest that the real failure wasn't that Yosef asked the butler for help. It's actually how he did so. That line, v'gam po, Lo asiti muma, kusamo oti babore. Even here, I didn't do anything that they throw me in the pit. Really? You didn't do anything, Yosef? You weren't curling your hair and painting your face and making yourself beautiful? You had no agency in that moment? And listen to that vav, that and. And even here, implying that also back there in the land of the Hebrews, I didn't do anything to deserve getting thrown in the pit. Okay. He may not have deserved that scale of punishment, but was Yosef innocent? Did he have a right relationship with him, his own powers and his brothers? Certainly not. You know, when I work with people in counseling, I often use a structure that I learned from Donald Miller of the victim, the villain, and the hero. The victim, the villain, and the hero all share one essential truth of life, and which is much of life happens to us. The difference between them is how they deal with it. The victim gains a sense of safety by advocating agency. I can't control the world, therefore I'm not responsible for any of the outcomes. I will just be a passive victim of the world. That may not sound attractive to you, but actually it's quite popular out there in the world. The villain kind of has one foot in the victim world. He's quite conscious of how the world happens to him. On the other hand, he never gives up his agency. He just takes out the pain of his experience on others. Oh, he's going to punish the world like every cartoon villain you've ever known, punishing the world for what happened to them. And what about the hero? Well, the hero also knows that life happens to them. The difference is the hero asks a simple question. What can I do in this situation to become more of who I need to be? The hero has a vision of their true self, of the emet to which they're called, and they work with integrity in every situation to become the person that they're meant to be through the very difficulties which they face. If you're consumed by the victim mentality, you'll never have integrity, because purchasing a sense of security at the price of agency means that you don't have the ability to hold the line. Integrity is all about aligning yourself with your true self, and therefore it begins by being straight with yourself and taking responsibility. And that's why Yosef has to learn. Life is the pits, either because you find security in staying in that low, dark, narrow place, or life is the pits because it's there in the darkness and the challenge that you can find your true self, which ultimately Yosef does. So we have to wrap this up with the heroic moment. How Yosef goes from being the kid who couldn't hold it to being a king in Egypt, and such a model of integrity that he is able to stand in the midst of an idolatrous culture and be a bridge between worlds. He becomes Yosef the Tzaddik, the righteous. Something happened there in those last 2 years of darkness in the pits of life that set up a final transformation and gave us Yosef's heroic moment, ability to step into the fullness of who he truly was in right relationship to self, control, and integrity, right relationship with God's vision for himself and the role he was meant to play in the world, right? Hence, right relationship with those around him. Ultimately, he's able to forgive his brothers, but he learns to forgive his brothers and enter back into the relationship that brings Yaakov's family to its fullness through that butler that we mentioned. Now, remember him? There's a great story, you may know it, that Paro himself had some troubling dreams. You probably know there were cows, they ate other cows, there were crops, they ate other crops. Either way, King of Egypt wakes up in the morning and he's got a headache. He's deeply disturbed because he doesn't know what these dreams mean. You may not know that Egypt is like dream interpreter, sorcerer, necromancer central. They all gather on Paro, but none of them can give the answer that settles his soul. Until the butler, who's on hand there with the other solution to Paro's disturbance, right, says, "Katai ani mazkir hayom," right? I'm going to recall an awkward sinning moment. And he reminds Paro that once upon a time, a couple of years ago, that he sinned and he was thrown in jail. And there in jail, he met this Na'ar Ivri, this Hebrew youth. And a point to ponder that Yosef is one of three people who's called an Ivri in the entire Hebrew Bible. He says there was this Ivri there, and he knew how to interpret dreams. Now, I want you to picture this. Yosef's there. He's been in that pit for years. Before that pit, he was a slave. Before he was a slave, his brothers beat him up and threw him in the first pit. And even before that, he was struggling to live in right relationship with himself. There's every reason for him to feel victimized, to feel like, that's it, life is over, or to grasp at any straw to get out. Suddenly, clank, bang, the darkness, oh, it opens up, there's light. They grab him, they pull him out, but not to execute him, to clean him up, shave him off, right, give him a whole new set of clothes, and place him in front of the king. And the king says to him, "I've heard of you, that you can interpret dreams." It's his moment. He's saved. I don't know about you, but my first response would have been, "That's right, me. I'm the dream interpreter that you need." It's exactly the opposite of what Yosef says. Paro says, "I've heard of you that you can solve my problem, you can interpret my dreams." The first word out of Joseph's mouth is, "Biladai. It's not me." Now, granted, he follows that with saying, "God will answer the peace of Paro," but just think of the integrity, the relationship with truth. Yosef has come to realize this is not about him. He has incredible abilities, not because he's worked hard or labored or because God gave them to him. And only by living in right relationship with those abilities will he be able to live in right relationship to the world, because he's been put in the world to follow a path of integrity, which will cause the truth that he's inherited from his father Yaakov, our embodiment of Emmet, that will cause that truth to become expressed, manifest in the world. I mean, you could picture, Paro says, "You're the guy who can interpret dreams." He says, "Not me." And they yank him out. What I really meant was, but he's not afraid, which of course is a hallmark of integrity. It's not that you don't feel fear. It's that in the end of the day, he doesn't have to fear anymore, because he knows as long as he maintains his integrity, that forward momentum and the ability to pick himself up when he falls, there is a longer, shorter path, a straight route from who he was to who he needs to be. And so Yosef found himself there in that pit and is able to say to Paro, "It's not about me, it's about God." Which, if you know the next part of his story, is the same answer he's able to give to his brothers. "Oh, you thought that you sent me down to Egypt? Actually, it was God." And that sense of acceptance while maintaining agency to take action is one of the hallmarks of integrity, right? And then, of course, he was ready to become king. Yosef represents a model of kingship, which is tremendously important, but I don't want to explore it right now. Just know that there's an element of rule in Yosher, in integrity, both in the sense of self-rule, that essential action of integrity is to get a grip on yourself, to hold the line. And the power that that self-rule of integrity provides is a foundation for building a whole new world around him. And we will see that power come to its real fruition in the next path on the Torah's heroic journey, which comes through Esther, the great queen of Jewish history, who represents the enormous power of the heroic moment, of the eight. So stay tuned for the seventh path.
Okay, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to yet another episode of the Jewish Heroism Project. We're still at the beginning here, people. Send me your feedback, RavMikeFoyer@gmail.com. You can find me on Facebook, RavMikeFoyer. Don't miss the videos and the supplementary practices and the source sheets that you'll find on JewishHeroism.com. And there's some great stuff coming out on Instagram, Jewish Heroism Project on Instagram. Check it out. I also want to thank the folks who give their hard-earned money to make this show happen. I want to invite you to join them. You can go to the website there, JewishHeroism.com, and on the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a button that allows you to make a donation. It's a one-time U.S. tax-free opportunity. Send me your feedback, give me your thoughts, and thank you, as always, for being part of the story. I'm Rav Mike Foyer, and this is the Jewish Heroism Project.